All right, everyone. Rabbi Shabtai said that he wasn't going to be here to introduce me, so I guess I have to introduce myself. My name is Yaakov Hoffman. I'm the rabbi of Washington Heights Congregation in New York, New York. I also work for the OU in their kashrus department, and as well as in their publishing department called OU Press. I'm also a sofer, but my claim to fame here in Boca is that I'm the grandson-in-law of Rabbi Fox, who is joining us today. The topic today is somewhat of a well-known topic, the issue of Chol of Yisrael. And we know that, but I'm going to try to give you a new perspective on it and a new understanding of it that you may not have been aware of or have thought of before. We know that here in America, so there is a divergence of practice between different Jewish communities, different Jewish people, individuals, regarding the insistence on Chol of Yisrael, which means, colloquially, that a Jew actually observed the milking. In other words, the people who are not makbid on Chol of Yisrael, they rely on the regular milk in America with the presumption that it's extremely almost impossible that there would be any milk from a non-kosher animal mixed in with this milk. The government dictates that only cow's milk is allowed to be sold as milk without any other modifier on the label, and nobody is interested in milk from other animals, kimat. I mean, a little bit here and there, but nothing on a commercial level. And others say no. So we have to have the actual Jewish supervision, even though we're pretty sure that the regular milk does not contain any milk from a non-kosher animal. So there are basically three divisions. So you have chassidim of various kinds, also non-chassidish Hungarians and Yekes, what you might call Haredi Hungarians and Yekes, though the term is not really accurate necessarily in America, but Heimish, that type of crowd, that they believe that it's absolutely required halachically that the Jew has to observe the milking no matter what, even in America, where we're sure that there's no milk from a non-kosher animal in the regular milk supply. Then we have the yeshivish crowd, the non-chassidish, non-Hungarian, non-Yekish yeshivish crowd, Lithuanian you might say, although I don't know, but ancestrally most of the people are from Lithuania. But the Litvish non-chassidish crowd, they fundamentally believe that there may be room to be makel, to drink the regular milk, to be lenient, but they believe that it's preferable to drink Chol of Yisrael, even if it's not absolutely required, and there's room to perhaps rely on the lenient approach. And then you have the, again, painting in broad brushes. There are exceptions in most of the groups, but the modern Orthodox, so the modern centrist, the Orthodox, so fundamentally, we believe that that it's not required. You don't have to have Chol of Yisrael. And maybe an individual who wants to be machmer, great, but there's no communal mandate to be machmer. And fundamentally, we believe that it's absolutely fine to drink non-Chol of Yisrael milk, at least in America. So you might think this is a new thing, this tripartite division of milk drinkers. Is a new thing. Because, after all, it's really only in America that we have good government supervision, at least, I mean, in the modern world. Again, there are other countries that have excellent government oversight of the milk as well. But it's only in the modern world that we have excellent government oversight of the milk. It's only now, everybody used to be makbid on Chol of Yisrael. It's a new thing that some people are not the makbid, whether it's justifiable or not. So I want to show you that is not true, and this division into three groups of Jews has pretty much existed from time immemorial. So let's just look quickly at the basic sugya to refresh our memory of why exactly there is this concept of Chol of Yisrael. The Mishnah says in the second parak of Maseches Avodah Zarah, it lists foods that we're not allowed to obtain from goyim. And one of the things is milk. That unless a Jew supervises the non-Jew milking, you're not allowed to drink the milk. So we normally assume that this is because the non-Jew might mix in some non-kosher milk from a non-kosher animal, into the milk supply that he's giving the Jew. However, it's interesting to note, just as a yidia, that the Yerushalmi, discussion of the Yerushalmi about this topic, I didn't give you the whole thing, but if you look in source number two, the first reason that the Yerushalmi suggests for the whole institution that you're not allowed to buy milk from a non-Jew is not because of that at all, but because of the issue of Gilui. Somebody say that? Gilui is also something we don't observe really nowadays, but in the Gemara all over, it talks about this idea that you're not allowed to drink liquids that are left uncovered. Water, milk, wine, because of the possibility that a snake, a venomous snake, would drink from this liquid and it would deposit some venom into the liquid, then you drink it and die. Now, scientifically, don't ask me to explain this, but this was something was very widely observed. It was a requirement in the times of Chazal. So the question is, does this apply nowadays? So according to 99% of poskim, this issue does not apply nowadays at all. It's a misconception, by the way, that gilui only applies if you leave a liquid uncovered overnight. That's not true. Then in Chazal, what? So in Chazal it says that it's the amount of time that would take a snake to sneak into the room and drink the liquid and then leave the room, so you wouldn't notice the snake being there. So again, depending, if you live on the maybe a high up on an apartment building, maybe it would be more time than if you live on the ground floor of a desert dwelling or something like that. Okay, but it's not overnight. Overnight is brought for kiddush for certain things. Okay, but I don't want to go into it now. So maybe the whole reason. So nowadays that we don't have poisonous snakes drinking our liquid. So according to 99% of poskim, basically everyone except the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says this is an absolute rule. Chazal instituted it. We still have to observe it nowadays, even though there's no concern for snakes. But 99% of poskim say that at least in this instance, so there is no problem drinking uncovered liquids because there's no chance that a snake actually drank from it. So if the first suggestion of the Yerushalmi is right, that the whole problem of chalav nochri, non-Jewish milk, is because of gilui, so then, is there any issue with non-Jewish milk nowadays at all? Anywhere, pretty much. Unless a place where there is actually venomous snakes.
The reason was there was a concern that the milk may have been...
Because the non-Jews, exactly. The non-Jews weren't careful to always keep their liquids covered the same way that the Jews were. So he might have milked a pail of milk, then left it out, and the snake would have drunk, and then he would have sold it to you, and then you would die because of drinking this milk. So if that's the case, if that's the reason... So we should just note that nowadays there's nothing to talk about. You're allowed to drink non-Jewish milk completely.
Snakes don't like milk.
According to Chazal, snakes do like milk. What snakes don't like is mevushel wine. It says if you leave mevushel wine uncovered, then it's not a problem because snakes have really good taste and they only drink non-mevushel wine. Okay. But snakes do like milk according to Chazal. Okay. But in any event, that's not the conclusion of the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi brings that in its conclusion that it is because of the potential admixture of non-kosher milk. But it brings, I think it's the Tosefta, this Brisa, that modifies the Mishnah statement. When the Mishnah says that the Jew needs to observe the milking, it doesn't mean always that you need to physically lay eyes on the milking. It's let's just look inside for a second. In source number 2, in the second to last line, "V'tanei kein Yisrael Yoshev be'eder v'goy cholev u'mevi lo ve'eno choshesh." The Jew can merely sit by the flock, and the non-Jew brings him milk, and it's not a problem. Even if he's not physically observing, his mere presence at the milking is enough to call this cholev Yisrael. The Talmud Bavli does not mention the idea of gilui at all by the milk. It does mention it by cheese, but it doesn't mention it by milk. And according to the Talmud Bavli, it's completely simple pashut that the issue here is that the non-Jew might mix in some non-kosher milk. So the Gemara asks a question. It brings the same brisa as the Yerushalmi, that you could sit, that the Jew merely needs to sit by the flock, but doesn't actually have to watch. Hey chidami, says the Gemara in the second line of source number 3. Idileka dover tami be'edro. Pshita. If the goy has no non-kosher animal in the flock, so obviously, you don't need to watch. Sitting there by the flock is okay. And if there's a non-kosher animal in the flock, so why is sitting by the flock sufficient? So the Gemara adds, and it concludes by saying, no, it means that you're sitting by the flock. The Yerushalmi didn't say this. But it means that you're sitting by the flock, but if you got up, you could see him milking. So he's afraid that any moment the Jew might catch him milking from a non-kosher animal, and that would not be good. Okay. So, again, the Jew doesn't have to necessarily physically observe. There are certain situations where the Jew can merely be present and not be watching. And we'll get to that that more in a minute. The main question when it comes to this issue of milk is the rabbinical edict against non-Jewish milk what we call a davar shebeminyan? We know there are two kinds of rabbinical rules. One type of rabbinical rule is Chazal are just drawing your attention to a potential problem, but if the problem does not exist, the rule doesn't apply. That is, for example, again, 99% of poskim, what they hold about gilui. Chazal didn't say, we aser uncovered beverages, period. They just said, you know, you're really not allowed to drink the uncovered beverage because you might die if a snake deposited its venom. But if there's no concern, then there's no rule. There are other rules where Chazal institute the rule, and they say this is an absolute rule. They took a vote. That's most rabbinical rules. They took a vote, and they said you're not allowed to do this. And even if the reason that we had in mind no longer applies, it's a famous example. For example, in a different topic, just for comparison, is we know that we're not allowed, unless it's a very severe illness, we're not allowed to take medicine on Shabbos. So Chazal said we're not allowed to take medicine on Shabbos because in the times of Chazal, the medicines were prepared by grinding, which is a violation of the prohibition of tochein, the malacha of grinding on Shabbos. So that's a davar shebeminyan. So nowadays, if you take, if you swallow a Tylenol, so that there's no concern that you're going to prepare a Tylenol. You don't know how to do it. You have to be a pharmacist and a worker at the company to know how to make a Tylenol. Nobody makes medicine this way anymore. Nevertheless, it's an absolute prohibition. We're still not allowed to do it, even though the reasoning doesn't apply. Well, the question is the gzeira against milk a davar shebeminyan or not? If it is a davar shebeminyan, they said, you are only allowed to drink milk if there is a Jewish supervision. Period. Doesn't matter if the reason applies or not. So then, would the requirement of Chol Yisrael apply nowadays in the U.S.? Yeah. Yes, it would apply. If it was just Chazal telling us, hey, you know, those non-Jews can be sneaky sometimes when they purvey milk. And they might sneak in some camel milk into your kosher milk or pig's milk or whatever. So you really shouldn't buy from them unless you watch them. If it's the second version, then are we allowed to buy milk in the U.S. nowadays? No problem. We're sure. Again, you can't know. Maybe there's someone who takes a syringe and sneakily sneaks into a milk plant. That's totally unreasonable. On a systematic level, there is no admixture. You know, there have been many scandals of food being adulterated. You know, like extra virgin olive oil. They have these scandals all the time. That it's mixed the other oils into the extra virgin olive oil because it's so expensive. Honey, a lot of times honey is an expensive product, so it's adulterated with corn syrup, which is why, by the way, you need to have a good hechsher on honey for Pesach, at least if you're Ashkenazi, because honey could actually be kidneyous if you're not sure that it's 100% the honey. But have you ever heard of any scandal involving milk in civilized countries? Never. We've never heard of such a thing. Yes? Oh, that is a great question. Is the concept of batel b'shishim applicable? It could be. We don't know. Again, we don't know how much he mixed in. But the Rashba, it's not on the source sheet, but the Rashba writes in the Torah Sabayis, where he says, when Chazal prohibited goyisha foods, because there might be some sort of admixture of non-kosher substance, we don't go by batel b'shishim. Don't go by batel b'shishim. They just wanted to have us be distanced from non-Jewish foods, So they, we don't have these technical halachic calculations. But, you know, if there is Chol of Yisrael, and then when it's in the Jews' possession already, and then somehow a little bit of camel milk gets mixed in, then yeah, it will be batel b'shishim. But when they enact decrees, so we don't have these calculations about the b'shishim or not. Okay. What? Right, but this wouldn't really be l'chatchila because... but you don't want him to do it. Mevatel isser l'chatchila means that you want to be mevatel this isser. Okay, so let's try to deduce if this is a dover shebe minyan or not, the milk issue. The Rambam says like this. Let's go skip to the second paragraph of the Rambam. It says... Actually, you know what? I'm going to skip all the way to source number 9 to start off. Okay? The Mordechai in Maseches Avodah Zarah, he reads the line. Remember, what did the Gemara say? The Gemara quotes a Tosefta that says that the Jew merely needs to sit by the flock and it doesn't actually need to watch. So the Gemara asks the question, if there's no non-kosher animal there, so that's pashit. It's obvious that he doesn't actually need to watch. So the Mordechai brings two different interpretations of that statement. One interpretation that the Mordechai brings is, the Gemara is saying, if there's no non-kosher animal in the flock, why do you need Jewish supervision at all? Because it's obvious that he's only bringing you kosher milk. According to that interpretation of that line in the Gemara, is milk a dover sheba minyan or not?
He might bring it in.
Well,
if nobody's there watching.
Oh, so you want to be machmer. Okay. So you want to be machmer. But the Mordechai says you don't have to be concerned for that. If you know that this non-Jew does not really have access to non-kosher animals, so that exactly is the Gemara statement. You don't need to watch at all. However, the Mordechai says that that's incorrect. That's not what the statement means. The statement means like what you said. That it means that it's obvious that a Jew sitting next to the flock is sufficient because that ensures that he's not going to sneak in a camel into the flock. So those two opinions in the Mordechai are exactly what we've been talking about. Is milk a davar shebeminyan or not? According to the first opinion that he brings and says is wrong, it's not a davar shebeminyan. If you're sure that there's no non-kosher milk, you're allowed to drink it. The other opinion is no. Even if you have no reason to suspect that there is a non-kosher milk present in this bucket that he's bringing you, you're not allowed to drink it because he doesn't say this explicitly, but we can deduce that he means that it's a davar shebeminyan. It's an absolute rabbinical decree, and seemingly the pashas would be according to that. Then in America, you would need Chol of Yisrael, even though we're sure that there's no non-kosher milk in the milk supply. The Rambam also says, like this, in the second paragraph of source number 6, Yisrael sheyoshav b'tzad ha'eder shel goy, v'holach ha'goy v'hevi lo cholav min ha'eder, afal p'sheish b'eder b'hem ha'tmeya, even though there's a non-kosher animal in the flock, ha'rei ze muter, v'afal p'shelo ra'o so cholav. So the Rambam says, again, I'm going to get into how he derives this from the Gemara, but the Rambam says that whether or not there's a non-kosher animal in the flock, a Jew sitting by the flock suffices. So we can also deduce from the Rambam, it also sounds like that in the Parashah Mishnah, so we don't have time to read it inside, that the Rambam holds that Cholav milk is a Dover Shebeminyan, and you are not allowed to drink it, even if you know there's no non-kosher milk.
Does he have to watch?
What?
The Jew sitting over there, does he have to watch, or can he read a Gemara?
Well, the Talmud Bavli says, again, the Brice itself does not explain Vaither, but the Talmud Bavli says that the Jew who's sitting by the flock, if there's a non-kosher animal there, has to be able to see the milking. Yeah.
Mutter.
What?
The Rambam says mutter.
Right. It's mutter for, if you sit there. He says that if, as long as you're sitting there, whether or not there is a non-kosher animal in the flock, he requires this, that you can watch, observe him milking, even if there's no non-kosher animal in the flock. He doesn't distinguish. He says, afal pi sheyesh be'eder behemah tameah. Whether or not there's a non-kosher animal in the flock. All right. Now, the Torah Sabayis, the Rashba, is a little bit more lenient. He only requires you actually being able to see the milking if there is a non-kosher animal in the flock. But if there's no non-kosher animal in the flock, then just sitting by the flock suffices. But again, he requires you to sit by the flock even if there's no non-kosher animal, which implies, again, that this is a davar shebeminyan. You're at least, there has to be a Jewish presence at the milking. Even if not Jewish observation physically with your eyes, there has to be a Jewish presence at the milking in some form. You can't just say, hey, I'm pretty sure that there is no non-kosher milk here, and I'm going to drink this milk that I'm obtaining from a non-Jew. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rashba. So it seems to be, and the Pischei Tshuva, the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch point this out, that the Shulchan Aruch holds that milk is a davar shebeminyan. The seemingly, we'll get to Rav Moshe Feinstein in a few minutes, hopefully, we'll have time. He's the big player in this, sugya. So, we'll get to, putting Rav Moshe Feinstein aside for a second, the simple understanding is, I'm sorry to be a spoil sport, but the simple understanding is that according to the Shulchan Aruch, one must have Chalav Yisrael even in the U.S. Now, who says not like this? Pretty big rabbi. This is quoted in Perush Rabbeinu Yehuda al Mandri. Nobody heard of it. The more famous Rishonim are Machmer on this issue. But there are Rishonim. If you look at, there's a great sefer called Kovet Shitos Kamoi, which collects all these Rishonim that nobody ever heard of and brings them all onto one place on the order of the Masechta. So Masechas Avodah Zarah in the Kovet Shitos Kamai, it turns out that there are many Rishonim who are lenient on this, and they say, well, it was accorded in the Mordechai, but rejected. But there are, the Kovet Shitos Kamoi brings Rishonim that it is not a Davar Shebeminyan. Says source number 10, he brings this from none other than Rav Hai Gon, one of the greatest rabbis who ever lived, the greatest of the Gaonim. Rav Hai Gon says that if there's a place where there is no non-kosher animal that gives milk, you're allowed to buy milk from a non-Jew. Quoted in the Kaftor of Aferach, in source number 11, from the Sefer Ha'itim, also, it's a collection of Geonic rulings that say, he says that this is not a problem. Again, the point is not the Jewish supervision, but the being certain, the certainty that there is no non-kosher milk present in here. According to Rav Hai Gon and the Sefer Ha'itim, are you allowed to drink regular milk in the U.S.? Even without government supervision. Let's say the government didn't care. Yeah. There's no reason to suspect that they would bring milk from a non-kosher animal. Yeah?
Why?
What do you mean, why? We're so used to the point, the ikar being the government. But it's not, according to Rav Hai Gon. The point is, do you know, is there non-kosher milking animals in the milk supply?
How would anybody know?
The question
yeah. Right.
So if you found a cheaper source, so then it would be...
They don't mention cheaper. The Pri Chodesh mentions cheaper, and we'll get to there in a second. That's an excellent point. But it's worse than that in America. The cheaper isn't even so much of an issue. Again, at least the way it's structured today, all the equipment is designed for cows. All the processing is designed for cows. Everything, the taste people are used to is cows. All the dairy farms, if you drive past and wherever states where dairy farms are, they're all cows, 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 cows. There's no, it would be an annoyance for the non-Jew to put in non-kosher milk. Again, it could change. I don't know, in 100 years, maybe it'll be usher. Maybe there'll be a taste for camel milk and they'll develop camel dairies. I don't know. But now, I think even if the government were out of the business of supervising the milk supply, according to, I'm not saying according to Rav Moshe, I'm saying according to Rav Hai Gon and the Sefer Itim, And there are other Rishonim also, I didn't quote everyone here, that it would be permissible to drink milk in the U.S. Now, the same point is made by the Radbaz, who was one of the greatest Achronim. He was a Rav in Egypt. So this is not just from one geographic area. Also by the Prichodosh, that this Shita is known as the Shita of the Prichodosh. But it's really much earlier than the Prichodosh. It's even from the Geonim, that you're allowed to buy milk in these situations. So the Prichodosh says, in source number 13, again, it's not the Radbaz says explicitly that it's not a Dover Shebeminyan in source number 12. And source number 13 says the Prichodosh, Haklal ha'ola deveir shel nimtza sham chalav tame oshu yoser biyoker mechalav tar. It's more expensive. Now, this point of the Prichodosh is not necessarily 100% oisgehalten, because the Rashba, in that same Rashba I mentioned before about how we don't go by Bota B'Shishim, the Rashba the Torah Sabayis suggests that when Chazal called your attention to a particular problem with a Goyisha product, so we don't go by cost, except in certain cases where it's mentioned explicitly that if the non-kosher item is cheaper, that is more expensive, you don't have to be concerned that the non-kosher item will be introduced. So maybe the Rashba disagrees with the Prichodosh. I mean, he disagrees with the Prichodosh in general about milk, but about this point as well, maybe the cost doesn't matter. But if you go with this cost issue, then for sure, you know how much camel milk and horse milk cost in the U.S.? I don't have a dollar amount, but it's much more expensive than cow's milk. Even in a place like, I was reading recently that there's apparently a lot of camel dairy in Dubai, which is now a common destination for Jews. Okay? So there's a lot of camel dairy. So the camel milk is still much, much more expensive than the cow's milk. So again, according to the Prichodosh, again, maybe not according to others, but according to the Prichodosh, it would certainly be permissible to drink the regular milk in Dubai. If, again, assuming it's not a Dover Sheva Minyan. So the Prichodosh says, the Prichodosh lived in the 17th century, and he made a lot of travels from Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Amsterdam for a while. So he says that when he came to Amsterdam, he found that the minag was like his shita, that people are drinking the regular Goyisha milk. And he says he drank it as well, as opposed to, you know, this is, I like poskim with guts. You know, a lot of poskim nowadays, they say, you know, really, I think it's okay, but it's better to be machmir, and I personally am machmir. Okay, so, but the Prichodosh had guts. He said, Mutter and I did it. I drank this milk. Now, so far we have two shitas. One, the Rambam and the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch, that would say it's Asur. And we have the Rav Haigon and the Radbaz and the Prichodosh that say that the milk in America is completely mutter. Now, who's going to be the intermediate shita? The intermediate shita is found in the name of none other than Rashi. Rashi, again, he didn't write it in any of his actual writings, but in the Sfarim that quote his rulings, so it says that, if you look at source number 14 in the Sefer HaOrah, there are other places also where this is quoted from Rashi, that it's mutter delolepuk mine churva, because people might get confused. Really, that means Rashi held it was mutter. If there's no concern for non-kosher milk, it's mutter. However, you shouldn't do it pasnished for a Jew to get goyisha milk, even if there's no concern for non-kosher milk in this product, because people might get confused. And indeed, Rashi's words are a little bit prophetic. There are Jews from America that they say, oh, I don't keep Chalav Yisrael. I'm not yeshivish. I'm not chassidish. I don't keep Chalav Yisrael. So then they go traveling in Ghana, I don't know, some African country where there's not tight controls over the milk. I mean that as an example. I don't know what the government situation of milk like is like in Ghana, just a random example. They travel to a country where there's really no good controls over the milk supply, and they say, well, I'm allowed to buy the Goyisha milk because I don't keep Chalav Yisrael. Chalav Yisrael is just the chumrah. But that's not true. If you go to a place where there is actually a concern that there is non-kosher milk, so everybody has to keep Chalav Yisrael. That everybody agrees with. You have to have Jewish supervision on the milk.
Then you don't know what they have audited.
In here, in America? Oh, in Europe. Oh, we'll get to that in a second. Hopefully we'll get there.
People
go to the farms to buy non-pasteurized milk.
Okay, so you watch the milking. Good, okay. So that's good. So if you, when I was here a couple years ago, so we went to a petting zoo and they had goats. So we milked the goat. We squeezed it into like a water bottle and then it's mamish chalav yisrael. I can't get more chalav yisrael than that. Okay. So so if you go to a little village and the milk is not under the government supervision, so it would still be mutter, according to the Rav Haigon and the Pri Chadosh, because again, there's no concern. Right, again, assuming that they don't have pigs and camels and other animals on this farm, so it would still be mutter. Now, it's also brought in the Tshuves Upsogim Lechachme Ashkenaz Vitzarfas, again, a sefer I never heard of before I saw it in this Kovah Shitas Kamai, but okay. And he says the same thing, that it hashkafically, it's problematic. Jews don't buy milk from non-Jews, period, even if there's no technical halachic concern. Now, okay, so you see all the three shittas are good, and shalom al Yisrael. So let's just go a little bit more in depth in terms of the more contemporary authorities, how they viewed this issue. The Chassam Sofer famously says, did the Chassam Sofer like new things? The Chassam Sofer, Chodesh Asur Min HaTorah, is his famous quip. The Chassam Sofer did not like new Jewish practices or new practices in the Jewish community. He wanted everything to stay exactly the same. So he says like this. Somebody asked him, what's the story with the milk that you're sure it doesn't have non-kosher milk in it, but it wasn't supervised by a Jew? He says, well, you know what? All I know is that in Ashkenazic countries, the practice of the Jews has always been that we insist on supervision, Jewish supervision of the milk. So he says, either that means that we hold like the Rambam and the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch that it is a Dovr Shebaminyan and this was halachically required, our supervision of the milk. Or it means that we know that the halacha is not like this. That really, we could have bought regular milk from the Goyim. But we didn't do it anyway. We insisted on the Jewish supervision anyway. That means we took a nether on ourselves. It's more stringent. We took a nether on ourselves not to drink the goyish milk, even though it's mutter. So that means that we can't change it, even if we hold it halachically mutter. So that's a little bit questionable. Yeah? Anybody else? No. Everybody else who quotes such a thing is following the Chassam Sofer. So they say you can't change it no matter what, even if it's halachically mutter, you have to have Jewish supervision. And then he says, nevertheless, you're allowed, if somebody eats non-chol of Yisrael, so then you're allowed to conclude them for Zimun. Yeah? Well, this is a huge sugya. When are minhagim binding on all descendants from, for all generations is a good question. But the Chassam Sofer assumes, in a couple places he has like this, that once it's like a widespread Ashkenazic minhag, so it doesn't matter. So that when Ashkenazim move to America, so they're also bound by this. It doesn't matter. That's what he's saying. There were many places in Europe where we knew that the Goyim were only milking cows or other kosher animals, and we insisted on the supervision. So again, this assumption that this is binding forever and minhagim can never change, is not so pashit. The Chassam Sofer also writes famously that he has a tshuva on women's hair covering. So he says that the minag is, this is what Moshe Feinstein also disagrees with, but he says that women have a minag that they cover every single strand of hair, even at home, all the time. And it can never be changed. So you look around in the... even in the yeshivish community, let alone modern centrist community, the women are not makbid on this. Anyway, okay. So, fine. So in other places, they did have the minag to actually drink the goyisha milk when there was no concern for the admixture of non-kosher milk. The chidah, he was very cool. He traveled a lot and he wrote, he did a lot of comments on other svarim. So he quotes someone who attacked the Pri Chadash for his ruling, and he defends the Pri Chadash. Again, we don't have time to go into all the details now, even though they're very interesting, but you read source number 17. And he says that the minag in, where? If you look at the third page, he says, at the end of source number 17, Shekenu minag tilim san ve'arjil. This is the minag in North Africa. In North Algeria, other places in North Africa, Libya, I think Tilim San is in contemporary Libya. So he says that this was actually the minag, that the Jews were buying were buying milk from the non-Jews. But, says the Chida, Linin halacha b'mokom shelo yesh minag be'ir pashut lakol lahakel yesh lahachmir v'adai. He says, if there's no strong minag, then we should be machmir, because that's the shita. Again, to be machmir is the simple understanding of the shita of the Rambam and the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch, the really big guns, hold that it's usur. V'chach pashta hara b'chol glilos Turkiya v'eretz atzvi. In the Ottoman Empire and in Eretz Yisrael, this was the practice that the Jews only drank milk with Jewish supervision. So here, according to the Chida, so your point is very well taken, that here in America, one could argue, again, if you're good, not going like the Chasam Sofer, that the minag in America is like the Pri Chadash and the Radbaz and the Rav Haigon. So that's the end. Doesn't matter, even though, again, the Shulchan Aruch is machmer, and that's normally the source of halacha, not always, but it's the main book of halacha. Nevertheless, since the minag is strong in America, at least it was before the Hungarians and the Yekes and the Chassidim started to come in the 40s or so. So the minag was strong in America. It was only Yechidim, you should know, that in those times it was only Mamish individuals. There was not any communal availability of Chol Yisrael in America before about the 40s. My grandmother-in-law is from Cincinnati, so Rav Lazer Silver was the Rav of Cincinnati, so he was makpid on Chol Yisrael, so his wife used to go to a farm to go watch the milking and bring him milk. But there was no commercially available Chol Yisrael, yeah? What? Oh, cool. Rebbetzin Fox, Miriam Fox. Yeah, she was born in, yeah, right, my grandfather-in-law right there. He's,
Even in the early 50s in Williamsburg, there wasn't a Chol Yisrael.
Well, the Tzelem Arav was the one who, yeah, he was the one who started what we call colloquial nowadays Mahadran Kashrus in America. But the Yekes took it on also, that like Rav Breuer, he also held very strongly that you needed Chol Yisrael. Because he says, I know the Pri Chadash and I know the Radbaz, but who cares? The Shulchan Aruch says you need Chol Yisrael, so we're having Chol Yisrael. Okay. So the question is, if you have government supervision of the milk, is that essentially the heter of the Pri Chadash, that it's not a davar sheva minyan, or is that better? Says the Chazon Ish, in his whole discussion of this, that the Chazon Ish sounds like he thinks that government supervision really does work. But he says that his whole presentation of the issue is that government supervision is an enhancement of the Pri Chadash. Really, even if you have government supervision, according to the Shulchan Aruch, you still need a Chol Yisrael. Who is the one who undermines this? Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein, everybody thinks that he was the first one who mattered non-Chol Yisrael, but that's not true at all. We saw that there was much earlier Rav Haigon and the Radbaz and the Pri Chadash. Rav Moshe Feinstein's chiddush was one thing and one thing only. He says that since in America we're so sure that the milk, the regular milk, does not contain any non-kosher milk, it's kosher even according to the Shulchan Aruch. Because it's as if a Jew was watching the milking. And that is, you can understand, a huge chiddush that not everybody likes. Chas v'shalom, not being motzilaz. Those who rely on it, of course, is it's at the very least in accordance with the sheet of the Pri Chadash. But to argue that the Shulchan Aruch, who says that even if there's no non-kosher animal in the flock, you still need to sit by the flock, that it's somehow better with in America because of the government supervision. So that a lot of poskim have an issue with. And the simple understanding, again, of the Shulchan Aruch is that it would not be acceptable to drink non-Chalav Yisrael in America. But nevertheless, Rav Moshe Feinstein strengthened this Shita so strong that he thinks that even the Shulchan Aruch would agree. Okay. But the interesting thing that Rav Moshe says is, even more than his Etzem Chiddush, is that even though I hold, says Rav Moshe, that the contemporary milk in America is kosher even according to the Shulchan Aruch, I still think we should be machmer. Baal Nefesh, if you're really frum, you should be machmer on it. Why? Why? If it's mutter, it's mutter. If it's mutter, even according to the machmer shita, I understand, according to the other poskim, that I'm not starting up with Moshe Feinstein, but it does seem to me to be a little bit easier to understand that the Shulchan Aruch really does not hold the Rav Moshe's Chiddush. But I understand, okay, to recommend to be machmir because the Shulchan Aruch says usher. But why would Rav Moshe, who says it's completely mutter, why would he recommend that nevertheless you should be machmir?
Because you never know who's in charge of the government.
Okay, so under one administration we drink the milk, and the next administration we don't drink the milk. That's exactly what Rashi was talking about, that people get confused from year to year. No. We don't do that. What do I think Rav Moshe Feinstein meant by recommending to be machmer? It harkens back to Rashi, to this, that whole sheet that's found in the Rishonim already. That even if it's mutter, there's a hashkafic issue with this. And that's what the Chelkis Yankev, unfortunately, it's a very interesting tshuva. He was the Rav in Zurich, Switzerland. So he's talking about how, nevertheless, and someone managed to sneak by some non-kosher milk, and even with the government supervision in Switzerland on a small scale, it wasn't commercially produced milk, but like in a village somewhere. Okay, whatever. So he says, like this at the end of the Chalkes Yankiv, the chein anu noigin po b'mdina Schweiz. In Switzerland, we are very makbid on Chalav Yisrael, even though the government supervision is very good. Swiss government is even stronger than the U.S. government in many things. Inflexible. Germanic mentality. Sha'akihilos, mefazer momon rava for kashrus d'chalav. Even though that the Chalav Yisrael is much more expensive, everybody's makbid. V'chein b'vdinas Anglia v'Antwerpen. It's interesting, he says England and Antwerp. It's not really in the same size. England is a country and the Antwerp is a city. But okay, the Belgium doesn't exist for Jews. It's only Antwerp. That's the only, okay. Umistoma gama charedim b'artus abris yodim lizar v'zeh. Oh, we also, he thinks in America, he doesn't know for sure, he thinks in America that ultra-Orthodox Jews, I don't like using that term, but we have to, no. They are makbid on this. Okay, good. I think the pshat is that Rav Moshe Feinstein was sensitive to a hashkafic and extra halachic point, which is that there are certain things that even if they're not the technical halacha according to him, they're part of the tzura of Judaism. The form of Yiddishkeit is that Jews behave in a certain way. Let me give you another example of a ruling of Rav Moshe Feinstein. He writes in a tshuva, I don't want to get into the whole reasoning, but that nowadays, he says, if you shave every day, you're allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed. But he says, I don't tell people that it's mutter unless they really need it for work. But even if you just feel like shaving on Chol HaMoed, really, that's also okay also. Why? Rav Moshe, you just said it's completely mutter now to shave on Chol HaMoed if you shave every day. What's pshat? The tzura of Judaism, the way Judaism is practiced from generations, you don't shave Chol HaMoed. The same thing, another topic of shaving. So as well known that the main heter for electric shavers that we rely on in the U.S. comes from Rav Moshe Feinstein. He says electric shavers are mutter. There are poskim that say halachically electric shavers are usser. That's a different story. But the Rav Moshe said electric shavers are mutter. Yet, nevertheless, why is there no tshuva in Igros Moshe saying that electric shavers are mutter? He never put his permission in writing. Why? because Jews should have beards. Even if it's mutter to shave, it's not right for a Jewish man to shave. Women are allowed to shave, even with a razor. But for men to shave, you shouldn't do it. Again, because it's not the tzura of Judaism. So the same thing too over here. Although it is mutter halachically, 100% according to Reb Moshe. Again, there are those who disagree. But according to Reb Moshe, it's a mutter 100% to buy milk, regular commercially produced milk in America without Jewish supervision. Nevertheless, the tzura of Judaism is that the Jewish community arranges for milk production for its own members. We take care of our own. We take care of our own milk. That's how the Jewish community operates on a proper level.
It's hard to understand that concept.
Why? Go to Williamsburg and say a bottle of milk is a bottle of milk. They'll carry you out on their shoulders. Yeah, question, yeah? Certainly we do. OU certifies as kosher. We rely on the Rav Soloveitchik, Paskin like the Pri Chodesh. He was more lenient than Rav Moshe. Even without the government supervision, he would have allowed it. Buy everything with Right, I mean, that's also an issue of to buy everything with Ashgach, even if something that doesn't need, like a bottle of water or something. So, halachically, you don't need to buy water with Ashgach. We at the OU, we tell this is not controversial, but you support the Jewish community when you buy products that have an OU. So there is an idea. Sorry, did you finish your point? Sorry. Oh, maybe there is. I'm sorry, we don't have time to discuss other milk, other dairy products. Really, that's an excellent point. I should remind you that really the whole shiur today has been talking about liquid milk. It could be that other milk products, cheeses, things with mixtures of powdered milk and things like that, it could be there's more reason to be lenient about that, hard cheeses. Unfortunately, we will have to save that for another time. Yes? Why do they put the OUD? Why not? You wanted to say parf? No, and every dairy product, you write D. That's what you do. Yeah. I don't want to speak for. I just started there a year and a half ago. I'm not setting policy, but there is what to discuss about the D. Last question. It probably should be used more extensively than it is. Yeah. One more question. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No. If it says OU and it does not say Chalav Yisrael on the package, then it's not Chalav Yisrael. Yeah, it would have to say Chalav Yisrael. Okay, thank you very much for listening. Good Chodesh. Thank you.